exactly reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
To the Asia Pacific region, John Clemens reports.
In comments to the news media during his visit,
you're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We thought this was the best shot we had at this point to get something in to assure the carriers that...
...deal of Obamacare. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is calling for a repeal of the 17th Amendment.
Before the 17th Amendment was ratified in 1913, U.S. senators were chosen not by the voters, but by state legislatures. Mike Huckabee tweeting early Friday morning after the Senate failed to repeal Obamacare that the founders had it right, senators chosen by state legislatures. Huckabee then tweeted, that way senators would work for their states. Senators John McCain of Arizona, Susan Collins of Maine, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska claimed that that skinny repeal would have hurt people in their states. I'm Chris Barnes.
FBI investigators say a Utah man has admitted killing his wife because she wouldn't stop laughing at him. 39-year-old Kenneth Manzanares reportedly told witnesses he beat his wife to death in their cabin on a cruise ship inside Alaska's Inside Passage. The couple lived in Santa Clara, Utah, about 2 hours northeast of Vegas. USA Radio News.
Get to Lumber Liquidators' Summer Splash Flooring Sale for the best deals on the best selection of wood-look waterproof floors and more. Choose from more than 40 varieties of vinyl plank up to 45% off. Get 20% off of Vela wood-look tile packages. And all water-resistant Dream Home X2O laminate is on sale. Plus, get pre-finished hardwood on sale from $149. Like Bellawood Select Maple, it's 30% off. More from 49 cents and special financing. Hurry, get to the Summer Splash Flooring Sale today.
A new study is saying people who drink moderate amounts of alcohol have less of a risk for a very common disease. Here's Chris Barnes.
Authors say the new study shows people who drink moderate amounts of alcohol do have a lower risk of diabetes than people who hardly ever or don't drink at all. The researchers in Denmark say they found people who have a few drinks 3 to 4 times a week have the lowest risk of developing diabetes. They found the risk of developing it was 27% lower for men and 32% lower for women who drink moderately compared to people who drink alcohol less than once a week. I'm Chris Barnes.
The federal trial of a controversial pharmaceutical executive is heading into the home stretch.
He's mouthed off to the media and made all kinds of faces during his trial. Lawyers defending the man known as Pharma Bro could finish making their case today. Prosecutors accused Martin Scorsese of cheating investors out of millions in a Ponzi scheme, but his defense says those investors were betting on Scorsese's brains. Now, unrelated to this trial, the pharmaceutical executive is probably most known for jacking up the price of a life-saving drug by 5,000%. Scott Pringle, New York.
The Food and Drug Administration made a surprise announcement today that they're going to work to reduce the amount of nicotine in cigarettes to non-addictive levels. FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said the move is putting a target on tobacco-related deaths, which are 480,000 a year. Gottlieb also said there are hundreds of billions of dollars in medical costs related to tobacco each year. USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Alahe Azadi. She's a reporter for the Washington Post, and she's written recently about a boom in an industry related to the program, that of stand-up comedy. Alahe, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the stand-up comedy industry, so to speak, right now. It's going, it's waxing, it's booming. How is this new bloom in comedy manifesting itself?
Yeah, so you can look at stand-up comedy over several decades and see there was a boom in the 80s. There was kind of a bust or a lull in the 90s. And now we're smack dab in the middle of a big comedy boom that's really been unlike anything we've seen before. Never before has there been so much material out there that's this easy to access. There's never been this many comedians who are this talented. And also the diversity as far as voices, the type of material they're doing, not just diversity in terms of race and gender, but just even in their personas. And you're having multiple working performers being able to do arena tours. So it used to be maybe one comic or two at a time, like I'm thinking Steve Martin or Eddie Murphy, were capable of selling out a Madison Square Garden. Now you have 10 comics who have sold that out at this point, and a lot of them are in more recent years. So you're seeing it in terms of the big names who are able to draw out stadium-sized crowds, Kevin Hart, all the way down to up-and-comers who are able to get TV shows and recognition a lot more quickly than they would have maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago.
How does Netflix play into this? Because I'm seeing, and you write about, an awful lot of new comedy Netflix specials available. Why is Netflix focusing on this particular market?
Yeah, so I interviewed for this piece more than a dozen comedians, and all of them, nearly all of them, would bring up Netflix or on-demand streaming video as one of the big drivers or at least factors that are playing into this comedy boom. Netflix is really doubled down on the genre of stand-up comedy in even just the past couple of years. In 2015, they put out a dozen specials that they produced. Last year, 19. So far this year, they're on average releasing one every week. So they put out, I think, 25 or 26 to date. And that's already more than the past couple of years. And it's not just, maybe some names that you're not as familiar with that they're putting out that you're able to kind of discover new comedians who you've never heard of. But they've also inked these reportedly huge deals, 40, 50, $60 million deals, $100 million deals with comedians like Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle. And these are also comics who have not put out specials in more than 10, 20 years. So Netflix has been able to draw these types of comedians who we kind of consider as legends of stand-up. And then also, they're now producing half-an-hour specials from other names. And so you know, really Netflix, it's able to reach into a lot of homes. A lot of people are discovering stand-up specials that way. And another thing that I noticed in my reporting was that there are comics who are able to benefit on their tours when they go to different cities and towns. There are some comedians who, you know, before maybe they struggled to sell 50, 60 tickets at a club. They put out a Netflix special. 6 months later, they're now selling out theaters.
I'm wondering to what extent Netflix's attention on this particular area is motivated by economics. I mean, we're talking about pretty low production costs here, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, well, if you compare it to other original programming from Netflix that is very highly produced, like A House of Cards or The Crown, things like that, where, you know, those series cost a lot of money to make. Maybe a $60 million deal with Dave Chappelle to put out three specials might sound, wow, it's like a lot for stand-up comedy specials. But when you compare it that way, maybe not as much. You know, when I would interview a Netflix executive, they really demurred on how much they're spending. And the company also doesn't share data as far as how many people are watching something. But we do know that Dave Chappelle's two specials that he put out earlier this year are now ranked as the most watched stand-up specials ever in Netflix history. So people clearly are flocking to the brand for and to the service for stand-up comedy. And, you know, it's also kind of having this effect on other more traditional, maybe television platforms. Comedy Central, they've really doubled down on social media and providing their content online through YouTube clips and other clips so that, you know, these things can go viral and can have an impact across the brand. And they also had a huge comedy festival that I went out to in San Francisco. About 45,000 people came out and saw comedy of all different kinds.
I know back in the 1980s, San Francisco was a big center of the stand-up movement, and since has fallen away in a big way. Is there a geographical center to this new comedy boom?
I think because of the way technology has impacted so many things, and especially comedy, so I discuss a lot of that in the piece, the democratization of comedy, it's not as centered as maybe it used to be. But if you talk to people in the stand-up comedy community, you know, New York, L.A., that's where industry is. That's really where if you want to break out, that's where you kind of end up. But there are also a number of comics who kind of get their chops in other cities, like Chicago, still the Bay Area, or Portland. I'm out in Washington, D.C. There's a really great scene out here. And, you know, then you're going on the road. So I think those two cities, L.A. and New York, still have that big draw. But because of everything else, maybe it's not as much as maybe it used to be. But really, those are the epicenters, I would say, as far as industry goes.
We're talking with Alawe Izadi, and she is a reporter for The Washington Post. You mentioned also that there's a range in terms of audience appeal. You've got guys like Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K. who you know, use a lot of strong language and adult themes, and there are guys like Jim Gaffigan, who are very family-friendly. How is that developing, and how is that playing into the greater accessibility of comedy and the greater appeal across different demographic groups?
Well, you know, it seems like what's happening more and more is that individual comedians are able to develop their act and their voice in a way that feels authentic and unique to them, rather than trying to play into some kind of market they think is appealing. I mean, there's always exceptions to that. But, you know, I think for a lot of comics, it used to be harder who maybe weren't deemed as quote unquote mainstream, kind of forced to be thought to play a part. So, you know, I spoke with some black male comedians who were feeling like, you know, now I'm able to just be more of myself as a comic and not be played into some kind of type. And I think audiences are responding to that. You know, a fan of Dave Chappelle can also be a fan of Jim Gaffigan, who can also be a fan of the Eric Andre Show, which is this really kind of bizarre, off-kilter thing. And it could be someone who doesn't maybe fit any of those demographic profiles. And I think it just having that space allows people to really be and present what they think is the best comedy they can make.
I know that stand-up comedy is still a male-dominated field. Has this new boom done anything to
switch the gender balance of the material that's out there?
I think there are actually a lot of dynamics within within stand-up when it comes to gender. I think if you're looking at maybe like at different cities, the gender balance there are a lot of female comedians. I do think that there aren't as many maybe female comedians who have as big thriving careers as at that level as male comedians, but they're there. And I think, again, it goes back to that point of, because we're being exposed to so many different voices, it allows a woman who does comedy to be just that, a woman or a comedian who happens to be a woman. And her subject matter and her voice may reflect that experience of being a woman, but she doesn't have to be typecast as this kind of novelty thing of, oh, it's a woman who does stand-up. And I think audiences are becoming more and more exposed to funny women, and then that makes it easier for other funny women to just be themselves and not have to be constantly playing into that type.
We've been speaking with Alahe Ezzati, reporter from The Washington Post. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope the comic scene continues to boom in Washington, D.C. especially.
Thanks.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Under 30 horsepower diesel tractors are in high demand. Yanmar meets this demand with the powerful SA series that go above and beyond ordinary tractors with the famously reliable Yanmar engine. When it comes to compact tractors, 35 horsepower is the just right size for many people. The Yanmar model YT235 tractor fits the bill. Open platform or factory cab, the YT235 is your best choice to put a famous Yanmar diesel engine to work on your land. Look to the Yanmar YT3 series for the best over 45 horsepower compact tractor. Only the YT3 Yanmar tractors can increase your productivity and time savings with the unique, proven, and reliable IHMT transmission. From subcompact 21 horsepower to 59 acre-eating horsepower, Yanmar provides you with powerful tractors and matching attachments for the whole range of compact tractor tasks. More information at yanmartractor.com. That's yanmartractor.com.
This report is brought to you by Sprint. 2017 marks the sixth year that Sprint is sponsoring the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Starting July 7th through July 26th, Sprint will challenge fans to trivia fun and soccer-related games for a chance to win up to $10,000 and other prizes. At select matches, the on-site football fiesta experience lets you meet soccer legends like American All-Star Brian McBride, along with Jared Borghetti and others from Team Mexico. Learn how to stay connected with Sprint's unlimited freedom plan at sprint.com/copa and use hashtag Sprint4Copa. Brian McBride, Team USA.
Sprint doesn't want you to miss a single second of the 2017 Gold Cup action. And with the Unlimited Freedom Plan, you don't have to. Enjoy the best of soccer on a winning network. Works for me.
Offer and coverage not available everywhere. Restrictions apply. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Void where prohibited. Open to legal residents of the 50 United States, including the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, age 14 or older, who at time of entry are members of Sprint Rewards Club. Sweepstakes begins at 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on July 7th, 2017, and ends at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on July 26, 2017.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We are speaking today with Jim Miller. He, with Tom Shales, is the author of the book Live from New York, the complete, uncensored history of Saturday Night Live, as told by its stars, writers, and guests. Jim Miller, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Some recent news came up regarding SNL. As you may know, Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican, is talking about a new proposal for campaign finance reform, and he says it would make Saturday Night Live's political skits illegal. Here's his quote. He said, Lorne Michaels could be put in jail under this proposal for making fun of any politician. Now, is Saturday Night Live likely to stop doing political humor anytime soon? And is Ted Cruz simply concerned about Lorne Michaels because they were both born in Canada?
I mean, look, I haven't had the opportunity to review the legislation, but it just strikes me as if you're going to go to jail for making fun of politicians, it's going to be one sad country.
I tend to think so, and you have to take into account that Ted Cruz also, among other things, is known for reading Green Eggs and Ham on the floor of the U.S. Senate. So there's that, too.
Political satire has been with us long before Saturday Night Live, and I'm going to go on a limb and suggest that it's going to be with us long after the show goes off the air.
I certainly hope so. How did Saturday Night Live first get started back in the 1970s? How was it created?
It was a very simple equation. Johnny Carson used to work Monday through Friday, and then on Saturday nights, his show would be repeated. And Johnny went to the powers that be at NBC and said, listen, I don't want to work Fridays. And so as a result, Friday night became the repeat night, and all of a sudden they had an opening on Saturday night. And so the network went about looking for people to come up with the idea, and they hired Dick Ebersol to start investigating it. Dick Ebersol found Lorne, and yada, 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 here we are 40 years later.
So one man's need for respite created 4 decades so far of comedy. Is that about it?
That's exactly right.
I know that some of the early cast members and creators of Saturday Night Live have referenced Monty Python's Flying Circus in England as a reference. How much was that a seminal program or influence on the first generation of SNL?
Well, they certainly were fans. And I think that it was wildly influential, not only just in the Saturday Night Live community, but also just comedy in general, because it was so special. It was so great. So I think that, you know, that was certainly one of the influencers. But, you know, there was a variety. It was a weird kind of cocktail in terms of what influenced the show, including Lorne Michaels' fervent belief that they had to come up with a new kind of comedy, because he thought that the old kind of comedy, the Milton Berle, Red Skelton kind of comedy with canned laughter and staged standing ovations and such, was quote-unquote corrupt. And so he wanted to do something that was fundamentally different. That probably was one of the, you know, if not the major influencer.
We're speaking with Jim Miller, the author of Live from New York, the complete uncensored history of Saturday Night Live as told by its stars, writers, and guests. What did Lorne Michaels do to differentiate SNL from what had come before?
Well, I think one of the things that he did was he decided not to pander. He decided that he was going to put on the kind of show that he wanted to put on and that the writers and the cast wanted to put on, instead of trying to figure out what people wanted. And in a way, that was the genesis of, I think, the real cool factor of SNL, because they were doing things that you know, you may not have heard of, or you may not have thought of, or you may not have been exposed to before. But once they did it, and the way they did it, made it cool and made it then popular. But I think that basic decision that we're not going to try and figure out what you want, we're just going to give you what we want, that was a big factor.
And how has the humor of SNL evolved over the course of its history? Has it stuck with that? Has it ever engaged in the sort of focus group sort of approach that some in comedy do? How has it changed over the years?
The focus group thing is just not part of the equation at SNL. I think the one thing that has changed is that as you started to kind of get technology more into the mix, SNL adapted pretty well. And for instance, with the digital shorts that came about during the advent of YouTube and when things started to go viral, that's one of the big changes that happened over the last 10, 12 years with SNL. And so they were able to, you know, move in a new way technologically even though there had been short films in SNL's history, they were able to really kind of develop this other artery, for humor and for their creativity.
We're speaking with Jim Miller, the author of Live from New York. How did Saturday Night Live get started with political satire? It's been there pretty much since the beginning, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, it started with Chevy Chase playing Gerald Ford. Mm. And falling down all the time, bumping his head. There was a great sketch early on where Chevy played Gerald Ford in debate, and he was asked a question about the budget, and Chevy said, I was told there would be no math. Those kinds of things.
Many view Saturday Night Live as being a little too safe politically. Is that how politicians view the matter?
I don't know if people... It's funny. Some people think that they're too safe. Some people think that they're very liberal. Some people think that they're hard on liberals. It's strange because I talked to a lot of people about the show, and I've talked to hundreds who have been involved in the show. And I think that everybody has kind of a different perspective on it. I think it's as simple as this. They really try and make, the political world as funny as possible. They try and they're very sarcastic and very wry about it, and where they see opportunities for humor, they go for it.
They don't tend to be particularly, I guess, what you would call edgy necessarily, but they certainly are not afraid to take on political figures and major political figures, and it seems like over the years that's had certain repercussions for them. They've gone head to head with a couple of major political figures.
Right, but I mean, look, they do edgy stuff. But you have to remember when you think about the word edgy, they're on broadcast television, so there's a lot of things right. That they can't do. And in this universe now, it's very easy to compare something that's on broadcast television to something that's on, let's say, HBO or Showtime or just even on the web. That's fun. It's a lot more edgier than Saturday Night Live. Well, there's just different rules. So I think that's part of, part of why sometimes people think they're not as edgy as other places.
We've been speaking with Jim Miller, the author with Tom Shales of Live from New York, the complete uncensored history of Saturday Night Live as told by its stars, writers, and guests. Jim, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Up next, Annie Jacobson, author of Operation Paperclip, the story of how Nazi scientists were brought to the U.S. after World War II. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then we suggest you call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 immediately. That's 1-800-658-8202. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we will give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 1-800-658-8202 now for your free author submission kit. That's 1-800-658-8202. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 1-800-658-8202. That's 1-800-658-8202. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with a simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 for your free author submission kit.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We've had 7 months to govern, and the best we can come up with is a skinny plan on 24 hours notice.
South Carolina Representative Trey Gowdy sounding off on the failure of the Senate to pass a health care plan. Gowdy said it's time for Republicans to tell people what they're in favor of and get things done.
We got to get better at telling people what we believe, why we believe it, and then persuading them that it's right for the country. We've had plenty of time to do it.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says the real losers of last night's vote on the skinny repeal are the American people.
The losers tonight are the millions of Americans who've been hurt under Obamacare, the millions of Americans who've lost their jobs, who've been forced into part-time work, forced to work 28, 29 hours a week, the millions of Americans who've had their health insurance canceled.
While licking their wounds, Republican leadership were critical of Democrats in the Senate who were celebrating and taking selfies while they say the American people are suffering. USA Radio News.
A new survey shares some interesting facts on women's pregnancy and something that might be lurking under your nose, literally. OBGYN Dr. Rebecca Brightman discusses new findings about the importance of oral health and gives some key tips for women to stay healthy during pregnancy.
Nearly a quarter of women experience a change in their oral health during pregnancy, and they've noticed that there's a decline. And about 70% of women actually experience symptoms of gingivitis. And what's really interesting is that only 56% of women in this survey actually report seeing a dental care professional during the course of their pregnancies. And you may think, why is this important? Gum disease and oral health is very important in pregnancy because if left neglected, gingivitis can result in periodontal disease, and there is a link, some studies suggest, between periodontal disease and preterm labor and low birth weight infants.
For more information about brushing for two, go to Crest.com or Oral-B.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Annie Jacobson. She is the author of Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. Annie, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure thing. The first way that I personally encountered the topic which you're discussing in your book, which is the program that brought Nazi scientists to work in the U.S. for the Pentagon and the space program after World War II, was through a bit of satire created by comedian Tom Lehrer during the 1960s about one of those scientists, Wernher von Braun, who worked on the V-2 rocket program for Hitler and also worked on the Apollo space program for America. And if you'll pardon me for starting the interview with a short snippet of song, I'll do so. Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Ah, Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun. Who was Wernher von Braun? How did he get to the U.S.? And what did he do once he got here?
Von Braun is such an interesting, dark-hearted character, at least the way I render him in my book, and I believe, you know, accurately based on what I came across. He was also a very complicated figure. He was head of the German rocket program. He was a brilliant scientist, and Hitler took a liking to him in the lead-up to the war when the Germans were building their arsenal of wonder weapons. This is what was going to allow the Reich to take over the world. And then after the war, the Americans had the same idea about Wernher von Braun, that he was a brilliant scientist and that his, weapons could help build up the American arsenal so that we would be the supreme, have the weapon system that no one could penetrate, and certainly not the Russians.
How did von Braun and others come to the United States? The operation that you describe, Operation Paperclip, whose brainchild was it, and how did the United States make the concerted effort to bring Nazi scientists to the U.S.?
Well, that's really where the story begins, and it's this incredible moment in the last gasp of the war. And you have the Allied forces pushing their way from Normandy into Germany to end the war in Europe. And various scientists are, you know, embedded with the soldiers because it's their job to locate these German wonder weapons we were just speaking of. And, you know, whether it's chemical weapons, there were rumors that Hitler had a biological weapons program, which he did. Of course, the V-2 rockets, aircraft. I mean, the list goes on about what the Germans were capable of. And so these scientists are, it was their job, scientists, engineers, physicists, a lot of guys from MIT, you know, sort of the nerdy, bespectacled scientist with the soldier protecting him as they go into these underground weapons caches and things across the Reich. And it begins, what begins to happen, and this is like kind of this thing, I have found it to be this incredible moment of the beginning of the slippery slope, which is that these scientists are finding weapons, and then they're also coming across the scientists, and they're realizing this is great to get these weapons and bring them back to America and reverse engineer them for our own purposes, but why not grab these scientists too? And that's where it all begins. And by looking at a lot of these archival documents, long lost to history in many ways, you see how it all started sort of, you know, it was much less of a grand conspiracy or plot in the beginning, and it was more of like individual men wanting what they wanted for their individual programs, Navy, Army, you know, the Air Corps, and so on.
Were these decisions, any of them individually or collectively, ever approved by the political establishment, or did this purely come from the intelligence and military community?
Yes, well, it's a dramatic build. So it starts out very kind of ho-hum. Even though we have a list, what's called the blacklist, of the most wanted scientists, the most coveted scientists. And by the way, von Braun's at the top of that list because of the V2 rocket. So we have this list of people who are going to be looked at for potential war crimes. And then we have these weapons caches we're coming across. And somehow they kind of all get stirred together. And then as this unfolds, as this drama unfolds, and the different organizations are like, well, it can't really hurt if I have that guy. And while I'm at it, can I have that guy? And what's one more, or two more, or 10 more Nazis really in the big picture if they're going to help our organization? And no one knows about it. Of course, I'm paraphrasing. But this is what starts to unfold. And then before you know it, you have General Eisenhower being asked, or asking rather, you know, he's in charge of all of the Allied forces, and he's the supreme commander in Europe, and he's sending cables to Washington, D.C., to the Pentagon, saying, what's the policy here? What am I supposed to do with this? Do I put these, you know, some of the scientists are being incarcerated and being questioned for war crimes, and others of them were thinking about, you know, bringing over to the United States. And there begins the next movement, which is, who should we hire and who should we hang?
So, in other words, it's sort of like a shopping expedition gone wild, gone horribly wrong.
Yes, I mean, it's a real great example of the sort of slippery slope or the boiling frog, that what starts out as a kind of, well, no one really needs to know about this. Before you know it, you have 1,000 top Nazis in the United States. And, I mean, that happened over the course of about 18 months. But in the beginning, you know, there were Nazis in America days, being brought to America days after the end of the war.
We're speaking with Annie Jacobson. She's the author of Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. How many of these men were Nazis, and how many of them were actually complicit in war crimes of one kind or another?
You know, this is an interesting debate, and I include new information because a lot of the family members of some of these other Nazis contacted me after, and it's really a debate because you're talking about 1,200 scientists, German Nazi scientists, and I say Nazis because they worked for the Reich, who came over here, and those are the ones we know about. And you must look at, to be just, one must look individually at each person to determine to the best they can their, you know, degree of culpability in war crimes, in the Nazi ideology. But I certainly do that with the 21 that I chose to profile. And I profiled the men who I thought were the most interesting. And the ones that seemed the most interesting to me were those who were right there in Hitler's inner circle in many cases. And to think that they would then wind up, you know, strolling through the Pentagon with kind of an all-access pass, as some of them did. That's what I found most dramatic, and that's why I very specifically profile these 21. And, you know, 8 of the 21 literally worked side by side with either Hitler, Himmler, or Goring during the war. And that is a remarkable thing to kind of hold as an idea in your brain.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment with Annie Jacobson, author of Operation Paperclip. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Under 30 horsepower diesel tractors are in high demand. Yanmar meets this demand with the powerful SA series that go above and beyond ordinary tractors with the famously reliable Yanmar engine. When it comes to compact tractors, 35 horsepower is the just right size for many people. The Yanmar model YT235 tractor fits the bill. Open platform or factory cab, the YT235 is your best choice to put a famous Yanmar diesel engine to work on your land. Look to the Yanmar YT3 series for the best over 45 horsepower compact tractor. Only the YT3 Yanmar tractors can increase your productivity and time savings with the unique, proven, and reliable IHMT transmission. From subcompact 21 horsepower to 59 acre-eating horsepower, Yanmar provides you with powerful tractors and matching attachments for the whole range of compact tractor tasks. More information at yanmartractor.com. That's yanmartractor.com.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi,
says Wernher von Braun. The author of Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. What was the public's knowledge of the involvement of Nazi scientists in military and space technology? Obviously, early on, this was not widely known. But come the 1960s, where you have Wernher von Braun working and others working on the Apollo project, it makes its way into public knowledge. What was what was the awareness of this?
Well, there was an absolutely concerted campaign by the U.S. government, by the Office of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which ran this program, by the way, to whitewash the Nazis' past. And so only a core group of individuals, those involved in, you know, taking depositions of these scientists before they came to the United States, those were the key people who knew the extent of the involvement of the scientists. And those are the files that I used to write this book. And they were highly classified. They were classified all the way through the late 1980s until a very intrepid reporter named Linda Hunt, who was working for CNN, first got them declassified. And then, you know, with great, you know, it really was difficult for her to access these files, and she certainly wasn't able to get all of the information that is now, you know, available. And I was able to find also in German archives and Stasi archives and things. But it was, you know, you brought up a great point. It was an utter whitewash. I mean, the War Department was issuing press releases saying, these are the good Germans. So it was not secret that they were here. What was secret was who they really were to the Reich.
We're speaking with Annie Jacobson. She's the author of Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. Did these scientists really help the U.S. stay ahead of the Soviets in military and space technology?
Well, that's the great debate. And I mean, I certainly bring up both sides of the argument in the book, and I have certainly been, you know, argued with by historians, and I mean that in the best way, because one wants to argue about these unanswered questions. Will we ever know if it was wise and just to bring Wernher von Braun here to head up our space program? Astronauts who I've interviewed, you know, swear by his good nature and what a great man, what a great scientist he was, and, you know, are convinced that without him, literally him who led the team, the Apollo missions would have never happened. But the Russians, on the other hand, also had German scientists who they hated because there was such animosity between those two nations. And so the Russian scientists made their German scientists very much second-class scientists. And in the earliest days of the space race, when it involved really rocket technology, you know, getting that dreaded ICBM to be able to travel such distances, the Russians led. And that was because of the Russian designer Korolyov. And so the argument is, well, if the Russians had Germans and they were winning the space race for a while, did we really even need our Germans?
What do you think would happen if it was, I mean, we're talking about Nazis here. We're talking about an enemy that we had just fought a years-long bitter war with. If it was revealed today that we had turned top Al-Qaeda terrorists and they were working to help the U.S. government using terrorist techniques against the enemy, given what you've researched, what do you think would be the reaction of the American public? And do you think the government would participate in such a program?
Well, you know what I have to say is really interesting, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation because I have wondered that question, and I've never brought it up. It's tangential to the story of Paperclip, but I've waited for someone to ask me that question, and I've probably done 100 interviews, and you're the first person to ask it, so I'm impressed because I wondered that. Can you imagine if we found out later, you know, 20, 30 years from now, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in Guantanamo Bay was actually doing exactly what you're saying, not only working for the government, but helping us to use those same tactics. And that's where I think the real dark-hearted nature of all of this comes in, because it's not just what your question, you didn't say, well, what if we turned Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and tried to get him to help us to fight the bad guys? What you're asking is it wise, does it make sense to take on the tactics of the enemy? Because that's what we did with the Nazi scientists. Certainly, I mean, one of the most odious programs of all is the biological weapons program. And I write about Dr. Kurt Bloma at length in my book. He headed up, he was Hitler's biological weapons designer. He was tried at Nuremberg and acquitted. And so important to us that we actually set up a black site in Germany, a place called Camp King, where Dr. Bloma worked for the United States government, because he was such a hot potato, there was no way he could come to the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's where that's really the heart of the question you're asking, right, is, you know, when you take on the cloak of the enemy, so to speak, so as to beat the enemy.
Do you think, I mean, along those lines, do you think we took on some of the darkness of that horrific regime by taking on these scientists? And do you believe that it contributed or perhaps exacerbated the institution of the military-industrial complex that we see today?
Absolutely no question. I mean, the reason I wrote this book after I wrote the first book I wrote in this trilogy is Area 51. And now with Operation Paperclip, we go back in time to where the military-industrial complex began, which I believe was, you know, in the last moments of in the ruins of the Reich, in essence, is where the American military-industrial complex began. And my next book, which will come out this summer, actually early fall, is called The Pentagon's Brain, and that will take you all the way through the military-industrial complex today. So there's no doubt that Operation Paperclip is the heart of that. And I believe that as a journalist, what I did in the book was let them show you what I could show you based on the documents that I was able to access. I interviewed a lot of the children of these high-ranking Nazis who had never spoken before, who showed me some of their parents' papers and books. And so when you begin to get a broader picture, I found journals of the American generals who really liked these Nazis. You know, right there in their journals, they would write, you know, had Scheiber over to the house today, I'm paraphrasing, but this is just, you know, we had a great time talking, parenthetical. He was worked closely with Hitler during the war. I mean, it says that. And you think to yourself, and these are all the chemical weapons. And so did we take this on? Well, certainly these weapons that the Nazis were, you know, the inventors of, the advanced forms of the chemical weapons, mustard gas, of course, in the First World War, but these were like nerve agents that they were working on, sarin and tabun gas. These are born of Nazi scientists. The idea that we would experiment on humans, I mean, a odious part of American Cold War science, but a well-documented one. And so all of this is happening under the idea, well, if we don't do it, the Russians will. And that's where you, as a reader, I think, have to draw your own conclusion. What do you think? Do you think we're using that? Is that the chicken or the egg?
Right. Do the ends justify the means? And I think there are some very serious questions about that. We've been speaking with Annie Jacobson, author of Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. Can't wait for your next book to come out this summer. Hope we get a chance to talk with you about that then. And thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Werner von Braun. You too may be a big hero once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by yours truly, Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com. Until next week, I'm Derek Blair.
Happy trip. Happy trip.
This report is brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association. Lifestyle factors that impact risk for cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease have been expanded, as reported at the 2017 Alzheimer's Association International Conference in London. These include declining speech patterns, different types of hospitalization, and hearing loss. A study of nearly 800 people in Wisconsin with a parental history of Alzheimer's found that those diagnosed with hearing loss were roughly three times as likely to have a mild cognitive impairment, which often leads to Alzheimer's. Dr. Keith Fargo is Director of Scientific Programs and Outreach at the Alzheimer's Association.
These findings suggest that in older adults, hearing loss could be an early indicator of cognitive decline. It's possible that identifying and treating hearing loss could be of real value in reducing the overall burden of Alzheimer's disease and dementia.
If these new studies are confirmed, monitoring hearing loss and drops in speech complexity in people as they age may prove to be indicators of the need for cognitive evaluation. For more information, visit ALZ.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We've had 7 months to govern,
USA
and the best
Radio
we can come
News
up with is
with
a skinny
Jason
plan
Wirt
on 24 hours notice.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We've had 7 months to govern, and the best we can come up with is a skinny plan on 24 hours notice.
South Carolina Representative Trey Gowdy sounding off on the failure of the Senate to pass a health care plan. Gowdy said it's time for Republicans to tell people what they're in favor of and get things done.
We got to get better at telling people what we believe, why we believe it, and then persuading them that it's right for the country. We've had plenty of time to do it.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says the real losers of last night's vote on the skinny repeal are the American people.
The losers tonight are the millions of Americans who've been hurt under Obamacare, the millions of Americans who've lost their jobs, who've been forced into part-time work, forced to work 28, 29 hours a week, millions of Americans who've had their health insurance canceled.
While licking their wounds, Republican leadership were critical of Democrats in the Senate who were celebrating and taking selfies while they say the American people are suffering. USA Radio News.
With free next-day delivery from Staples, you can run your business like a pro. You can guarantee the marketing department that they'll get their supplies tomorrow and guarantee the accounting department that they'll be delivered free. With free next-day delivery, you'll have the ability to move deadlines up and adjust budgets down. Go to Staples.com and get the office essentials you need delivered next day for free. Staples. It's pro time. Orders over $49.99. Place by 5 p.m. Excludes weekends and holidays. Eligible items only.
Attention all men. Did you know that bladder control problems are very common? If you or a loved one is suffering from male incontinence, please listen to this important message from Men's Liberty. Because bladder control problems do not need to keep you from living an active life any longer.
Using Men's Liberty, we can go places and I don't feel a sense of anxiety.
Best of all, costs can be covered by Medicare or private insurance. Call 888-827-7549 to receive a free week's supply with your order. That's 888-827-7549. Call 888-827-7549.